Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome into another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. I'm your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. With me today, he's the Capitals insider. He is the Jesse Pinkman to my Walter White.
Get out of here with that.
He is.
Nobody out there knows who that is. Shit.
What do you mean? Everyone knows that show.
What show is it?
Breaking Bad.
I have never seen Breaking Bad.
You've never seen Breaking Bad?
Never seen it.
This is craziness.
Look, I know it's a great show, and I probably should have seen an episode or two, but I never saw it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Add that.
I watch a fair amount of television.
Add that to your list.
I watch a fair amount.
Add it to your list.
Yeah.
Add it to your list.
Rob Carlin has been all over me about that.
Add it to your list. And the first couple seasons are good. It gets bananas the further you go. So you guys stick it out. It is a good show. Anyway, it is the mailbag pod, meaning that you, the listener, get to decide today's topics. And what we will talk about today, we're going to talk about line combinations, what to do with Andre Burakovsky, when it's time to turn to prospects, and more trade rumors. First off, I've been told by many people over the course of the week that while the catchphrase for Wayne's World was party on, they do in fact say game on in their hockey game as well. So you were technically correct, Dart.
Not technically. I was just correct.
Anyway, first let's move on to the important business. Graham Jackson writes, I'm a big fan of your show. Thank you, Graham. He says, Burakovsky's game has really fallen off this year. Even without the injury, inconsistency has been his MO throughout his young career, and now he can't even stay in the lineup regularly. I can't see how this is a good situation for him or the Caps. Do the Caps try to flip Berkey at the deadline, or does any deal that involves Berkey need to be perhaps for another struggling young player, a.k.a. a long-term asset? Tarek, is it time to sell Burakovsky?
No, it's too early to talk about selling Burakovsky. We saw in the playoffs last year and at times before the hand injury last year the type of player he can be when he's on and he's feeling it and he's dialed in. I think there have been too many interruptions this season for him. You know, the injury kind of got off to a slow start. Then he came back and struggled to find his place in the lineup. Then he got sick. Then he got scratched again. I mean, there's just been a lot going on for him. And remember, he turns 23 this week. I mean, he's still a very young player.
He is 23 now. He turned 23 on Friday.
Right. You know, we forget that he's still that young because he's played so many games at this point, 250-some-odd games. 224 games in the NHL right now. So you can't give up on a player who has that much ability, who has that skating stride, that shot. You just got to hope that it starts to click. And look, it happens at different rates for everybody. Some people figure it out their rookie season. Some people figure out their second. Some people wait till their fourth or fifth season before it happens. And you know, hopefully he can come back next year healthy and stay healthy and find his game right off the bat. You know, he's a guy I still think could score 25 goals in a season for this team.
Andre Burakovsky was playing the best hockey of his career, I think, at the end of last season in the playoffs when he was called upon to be a top-line winger. If you're going to sell a 23-year-old player, you better be damn sure that you've got a bust in your hands and he can't grow into anything. And I just don't believe that yet. We've seen him be successful. sometimes players have bad seasons, and there's no getting around that. This is a bad season. I think when it's all said and done, this is going to be a lost season for Andre Burakovsky, and that's unfortunate. But that happens, especially with young players. He is not even close to his prime yet. And I think it would be probably a bit foolish to sell unless you're getting something of equal value in return. So, like as you said, another young player who you think their ceiling is very high. But you don't want to sell a 23-year-old player just because he's having a bad season and see him develop into a 30-goal scorer and you regret it every single year and wince every time you hear his name on the latest highlights. You don't want him to turn into that kind of player. And let's not forget, you know, Dmitry Orlov, he had a lost season. He didn't even play because of his broken wrist. He didn't even play that entire year. He's developed into one of, if not the best defenseman on this team. So that's just evidence of why you don't sell on a player who is this young with the ceiling that he has. It's just too early for a player like Burakovsky, who we've seen has the ability to score in this league in the past. So it's far too early there. Deborah from Burtonsville writes that she's been going to games since the mid-80s and enjoys listening to the pod on the way to work. Thank you very much, Deborah. Her question, why does Barry Trotz never put Ovi, Oshie, and Kuzi on the same line? Thank you. Enjoy the podcast and looking forward to continuing through the Caps playoff run to the Cup. I like the boldness there. Tarek, I was wondering this before he reunited Backstrom with Ovechkin. There was one combination that he really didn't turn to, and that was Ovechkin, Kuzi, Oshie. I was wondering, why not try that trio?
It's a good question. I'm sure over the past 2 years of covering the team, we have seen it at times.
I'm sure we've
seen it. I'm kind of like racking my brain right now. But
I think
sure
we saw it when he, after they were reunited, and then he switched it back again.
It's tough to say why he hasn't tried that. But I will tell you this. One of the more overrated things in hockey, I think, is line combination sometimes. I know we can sometimes get pretty obsessive about them. You know, until you get to the postseason where you really want, you know, you really need that chemistry. I don't know. I don't get too overly wrapped up in them because also having covered Trotz now for 2 years, once you get used to seeing a line, it's going to get blown up anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the advantage to that is when you get to the postseason, if you do have some injuries or at any point in the year, if you have injuries, everyone should be familiar with everyone else. Like there is not a line combination that is out there that by, let's say, late February or March, you're looking at your Capitals wing, center and you look out and you go, who are these two guys? I mean, at some point you have played with everyone,
right?
Which I think is an advantage. But I'm sure there is a reason why Trotz hasn't played 892 and 77 together. You know, the one thing that jumps out to me right off the bat is 8 and 77 aren't exactly the fastest people in a league that's getting faster. Kuzi is, you know, he's probably the prettiest skater on the team, probably the fastest player on the team, next to Jacob Verana. But yeah, great question.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. That is definitely a line I would have liked to have seen more of this season. As you said, I'm sure we've seen it a little bit, but I'm not quite sure there. But again, as you said, you know, the lines really don't matter until probably after the trade deadline when Trot sets a lineup, and then that's you realize, oh, this is it. And then it doesn't change until the postseason. But thank you for your question. We will be back with more of your questions right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Let's dive into more of your questions. Daniel Jones writes, with regard to prospects, at what point do you finally take a shot and or pull the plug? With guys aging or on expiring contracts, when you say, okay, it is Barber or Boyd or player X's time. Tarek, when is it time to go turn to a prospect?
I'm a little unclear on the question, but I think he's saying when is it time to bring that player in full time? Like when is it?
Yeah.
You know, I think there are some guys down in Hershey who are starting to get long in the tooth in terms of time as a prospect. I mean, the Travis Boyd is the guy who jumps to mind. I mean, here's a guy who probably in another organization that wasn't as top heavy and as stacked as the Capitals were the last few years, probably would have played a lot more games. And I think we're kind of getting to that point now where look at the way this roster is structured. You have a lot of guys at the top end, and you're going to have more guys after this year, after John Carlson gets re-signed, if he does re-sign here, in fact. That top end is going to get even heavier, which is going to require them to fill in, to kind of backfill with even more young, inexpensive players. I think it's going to create an opportunity for a Riley Barber, who's lighting up in Hershey right now, and a Travis Boyd, who, you know, as we mentioned in a previous podcast, is, you know, a guy who perhaps could replace Jay Beagle next season if Jay Beagle isn't re-signed. And we know there's going to be some difficulty in that area as well. But, yeah, there are some guys down there that are getting to that point where it's, you know, you're only a prospect for so long. Like, in my opinion, once you get past 24 or so,
right,
you're now an AHLer who's trying to, you know, to get a job. But, I mean, again, guys come along at different rates. I mean, Chandler Stephenson took him a while to kind of get going.
Yeah.
Now he looks like he's going to be a full-time NHLer. Paul Carey, remember Paul Carey?
Oh, yeah.
He was 28 years old last year, like in and out of the lineup. He's been playing for the Rangers.
Playing pretty well.
Pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, everyone kind of has to, you know, it happens at different times for guys. But for me, I think that's what he was saying. I think 24 years old is kind of the point where if you aren't progressing solidly towards becoming a full-time NHL, or you're now kind of an AHL veteran who's trying, hoping for a second chance.
Yeah, the answer to the question, which is probably won't be very satisfying, is it depends on the prospect. You know, it depends on a lot of other extenuating circumstances. If you look at Madison Bowie, he played like one of the top six defensemen in the preseason. He looked great in the preseason, but the Caps had eight defensemen on their roster at the start of the season, and he wasn't one of them. The reason being is because they were right up against the cap, and they could send him down to Hershey without having to pass him through wires, through waivers.
Which is through wires.
Yeah. So, you know, even though he was NHL ready, circumstances dictated that he was still in the AHL. Now, circumstances dictated again that it was time to call him up, and he hasn't been back ever since. Another example is Chandler Stephenson. Didn't play well in the preseason. Started the season down in Hershey. Not only started the season in Hershey, passed through waivers to get to Hershey. Has come up because of...
He wouldn't clear now.
He came up because of injury and established that he can play in the NHL, and so now he's there. So with these players, if you're good enough, you end up playing. If you're good enough and the team is dealing with cap issues, then you end up playing because you are a cheaper alternative than some of those veteran guys.
And you're going to see that next year. There are some guys who are awfully close to being NHL ready in this organization, who, like I said, there's been a logjam, who are probably a couple years, you know, on a bad team, they would have played already a lot of games.
Right.
But you're going to see those guys, the Barbers, the Boyds, you're going to see some of those guys kind of start to pop up. Right. And grab full-time roles here in D.C. soon.
And we've seen
Jonas Siegenthaler. I mean, you're going to see some guys.
Yeah. And we've seen in the last few years a Capitals team that was chasing a Stanley Cup. They wanted to bring in the veterans. So it was a veteran-laden squad. And now that they've got some cap issues, now they're starting to look to the future a little bit. Now we're starting to see some more prospects come into the lineup. So that's the way it works. Obviously, if someone establishes them, oh, this guy needs to be in the NHL, then he'll be in the NHL. But otherwise, there's a lot of other circumstances that go into deciding when to bring a player in or when to sign a veteran. So thank you for your question. Next up, Kate Trout. Question, either regarding the trade deadline or the offseason, who do you think we would benefit from trading? As you said in the last podcast, we need fast players, but all the players that are UFAs seem to be fast or are rookies that I feel Trots would be hesitant to play top line again. I personally feel that trading Chorney or DSP could free up some cap space. Rumors have been going around about trading Orpik or Beagle, but I don't think that would be beneficial for our shallow D defense. So she's not talking about trading who they should trade for. She's talking about who they should trade away from this
roster.
Who
they should dump, yeah. Well, I think there's going to be some natural attrition. You know, we've mentioned a number of times here. I think Jay Beagle is going to be tough to keep. Depending on where John Carlson's number comes in, assuming he is re-signed, you know, Taylor Chorney is going to come off the roster. DSP also on a one-year deal, so he's going to come off the roster unless they re-sign him. I think he might have played his way into an extension as well as he's played this year.
I think he may have.
So yeah, there's going to be some natural attrition in which guys are going to come off this roster. I think the one guy, if you're talking about actually trading, I would say Philip Grubauer is the player that I'm going to have my eyes on this offseason in terms of they'll be able to get some good return for a 25-year-old goaltender who's got starting capability or ceiling.
He is a guy with some trade value. I like this question because I think it's hard for fans to understand the value some players would have on the trade market. So to go into some of the players that she's talking about, you know, she mentions Taylor Chorney. Taylor Chorney right now would pass through waivers without getting claimed, probably. To think that he would net you anything in the trade, he's not going to. There's pretty much no trade value there at all. And he's coming off the books at the end of the season anyway. DSP was a guy who was cut by New Jersey. I can't see anybody laying down a lot for him because if there's one thing we've seen from him in his career, it's inconsistency. So, yeah, he's played great here, but I think a lot of teams would have to see it for another year before they realize, before they think, okay, this is the DSP, because he could just as easily fall back to where he was before he got bought out in New Jersey. The Brooks Orpik one always sort of makes me laugh. And I know that he is a controversial player to many people, but I love the people. There are a lot of I see a lot of this on Twitter. Brooks Orpik is the worst, most overpaid defenseman in the NHL. The Caps should trade him for a first-round pick. Well, if he's so useless, you're not going to get anything from him in a trade, you know? So I always sort of laugh when people say that, list all these reasons why a player is terrible and should be traded, and then think he would net them some sort of massive return. Brooks Orpik, I think, has played an important role on this team this year. I don't think he would net anything in a trade because he's older and he has a pretty sizable contract.
He's going into the last year of his deal as well.
He's going in the last year of his deal. We'll see what happens with him this summer. I think there's some speculation about what his future may be, but you know,
he keeps playing the way he's playing right now. I think
they'll keep him.
Absolutely.
I think you keep him. But that is a question for another day. Kate, thank you very much for your question, because I know that's something that a lot of people. I think trade value is something that is hard to figure out, and I think it's good to help enlighten the fans there. So thank you very much for your question, and we will be back to answer another fan question right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Tarek, let's move into our last listener question of the day. This one comes from Bill Selby. He writes, have you heard any rumors about Hjalmarsson being available from Arizona? Left-hand defenseman, 30 years old with 1 year left. Playoff experience would seem like a good acquisition for this team if they can get his $4.1 million salary under the cap. Not a rental, so that's also good. Maybe they would want Burakovsky. What do you think about the... What do you think about that, Dart?
Well, I'm not trading Andrei Burakovsky for a rental, if that's what he's asking.
Right.
I do think that, and I've said this a number of times, that the Capitals' priority needs to be a left-handed defenseman who can play in the top four. Maybe, you know, ends up in the bottom pairing, but can play in the top four. And Hjalmarsson would be a pretty good fit, I think. You know, as I've said also a number of times, you know, when you're coming up with guys you'd want to target, don't look at the teams that are in the fringe or in the playoff hunt. Those teams aren't selling. Go look at the teams at the bottom of the NHL standings. That's where you're going to find the players that the Capitals and other teams are going to be kind of hawking a little bit.
Right.
Arizona, Buffalo, Ottawa, Vancouver, the teams that are just hopelessly out of it. Detroit, Montreal, you know, I would even say throw Edmonton in there. You start like, go look at those rosters and that's where you're going to most likely find the players that the Capitals will be targeting.
Yeah, this is one of those rare situations where I think the Capitals would actually benefit from getting a rental as opposed to a player with more term left on his deal, because they're looking ahead.
Yeah, no, you absolutely do not want to take on a player with...
You don't want more years. You want someone whose contract is coming off the books at the end of this season, because you want playing time for Madison Bowie and Christian Juice. I think that is the priority for this team. Now, remember, Brian McClellan said that he wants John Carlson pretty much no matter what. So let's assume John Carlson is back next season. That means you've got pretty much the same defense you have now. So if you add another player to that mix who will come back next season, it's going to be hard to get Juice and Bally playing time, and they need as much playing time as possible to develop in their second year of their NHL career so that they're not in the same position next season where, oh, our defense is in trouble because we have Juice and Bowie. We need to add somebody there. You want to get them playing time so they can develop into veteran defensemen. So this is one of those situations where if I were Brian McClellan, I would only be looking at rentals. I don't want to take on a player with more years.
But you know, to answer the listener's question specifically, you know, I haven't heard any direct link of Jarmelson to the Capitals. But again, I do think he's the type of player. So when you start looking at the guys who the Capitals need, I've always admired his game. I mean, he's a top four player. He blocks shots. He moves the puck. He can be physical. He's a big player, 200 pounds, 6'3".
And he's on Arizona, and I don't think there's anyone who's untouchable.
He ain't
going to
give you any goals or assists, but he does a lot of the other stuff really, really well, and that's what this Capitals team needs. So I would say a player of his ilk is what they should be targeting.
Thank you very much for your questions. You guys get to decide the topics of the day, and it doesn't work if we don't have audience participation. So we really appreciate everyone who took the time to write in and send us a question. If you want to have your question read and answered on the next podcast, on the next mailbag pod, you can send it in to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available, and be sure to give us a good rating and review. I've been reading some of those reviews. You people are very, very nice to us. Even Tarek, I don't know why what you people see in Tarek, but everyone's very nice and complimentary on their reviews. We really do appreciate that. And it really does help spread the word about the show. So if you like the podcast and have not taken the time to subscribe or give us good rating and review, please take the couple of minutes it takes to do that, because it really, really does help us out.
Nicholas Jalmerson.
Thank you, Tarek, for that. Just in case anyone was wondering how to say it. There's no better way to end the episode than that. For Tarek El-Bashir and Nicholas Jalmerson, this is JJ Regan. Now let's get the puck out of here.